and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org.
I'm here with Jim Fadiman and Jordan Gruber, and we're talking about microdosing psychedelics, small, very small amounts of psychedelics. And you have established some protocols, and we mentioned this at the very top of the program. It's not like you take a dose every single day. What are the protocols that you suggest?
Well, remember, pharmaceuticals, which is what we're looking at, you take them every single day because they suppress a symptom. And while they're in your body, they are effective or not quite effective, depending on. But that's what they do. And then they leave your body and the symptom is free to re-express itself. And many pharmaceuticals are very clear that maybe healing will occur, but you may have to take this for the rest of your life. Microdoses have a very different way of looking at the same issue, which is the body is probably the best healing device we've ever created, okay? I like things that take 50 to 100 million years to work out the kinks. And when it's stressed, it's upset, it's hurt, it's sick, it's unhappy, so forth. So if you give something that has the general properties of increasing the body's capacity to heal itself, it brings systems back into equilibrium. And equilibrium is a kind of classy word for health. Protocols are how little does the body need to do the work itself. And all the protocols that have been developed very independently around the world include days off. So that it's different. So the most popular protocols are one day on and 2 days off. So you're taking it, as Jordan has worked it out, 9 times a month.
11.
11,
all right.
Yeah. And the other popular protocol was developed by Paul Stamets, the great mycologist, and he has suggestion of taking it 4 days on and 3 days off, which leads to how many times a month?
19.
Okay. So those are the two most popular methods. And again, what we find is people work out for themselves what works best for them. And after they are able to work with microdoses basically on their own, working out the dose with their own body, they may shift those protocols, taking it more or less often. Every other day, for example, is popular because you don't have to remember anything. And very important, the protocol includes time without taking anything. So if you've taken a microdose for 4 to 6 weeks, it's appropriate to take 2 to 3 weeks off so the body can fully integrate what it has acquired and what it maintains.
Well, with microdosing, less is enough. That's what we find over and over, that it works better when people take less. So Jim's protocol, the Fadiman protocol, which is 1 day on and then 2 days off, is the protocol that I always recommend to everyone, not because Jim is my close friend and we've written a book, but because it's the most conservative and I believe is mainly the reason why this has worked so well for so many people. The same thing goes with the recommended dosage range for beginners. We recommend that everybody start at the low end of the dosage range, maybe even below it, and see if that's enough and that's all you need. And so it's being conservative that really makes microdosing as effective as it's been.
So what would a dosage for a conservative amount of psilocybin, of mushroom, how many micrograms or whatever it's?
A tenth of a gram is considered a good low beginning. 4 tenths of a gram is considered on the high end of microdosing.
1 to 3. We've settled on 1 to 3 in the book, and I want to go with that because okay. I think when you take more than that, you know the difference between being at a microdose and being just a little bit more and in a threshold dose. I personally know what that feels like, and both are fine. But if you're serious about this, either in terms of the physical and mental conditions being better, or we haven't talked much about enhanced performance, which is the other half of the book, It's better to start low and even below the dose we recommend if you have the time to figure that out. There's sort of no rush to get there.
Well, you write about that second day when you're not taking it, that there is something that happens that second day that's very beneficial.
Well, what early discovery is people said, you know, I really felt good taking it that day when I took it. And my goodness, the next day I felt just as good. And for many people, they say the second day is even better. Psilocybin or LSD has left the body, but the body has both retained the advantages of having the dose and is integrating it. You got to remember, we got trillions of cells, and they have one major interest, which is not who's going to win the next game, but who's going to stay healthier longer.
Yeah, it's a whole cooperative system that's just talking to every part, is talking to every part. And you're saying that microdosing actually talks to the whole body and not just targeting one part. Am I getting that correct?
You're getting that exactly correctly, which is the body is a healing. That's what it does. That's all it, most of our body, like 98% of it, that's all it's interested in. There's a little teeny part above our foreheads that has all these complications that the body says, okay, you want to behave that way? I'll let you know in a couple of days or maybe a couple of weeks how many cells you've damaged, and I'll tell you what the price was. What we want is something that accelerates and maintains the best health possible at the least risk. Even very, very high doses are among the safest physical drugs we know. And microdoses are just that much safer.
And when you get going, Justine, when you get into a pattern of taking a microdose for up to several weeks, you know, the pattern of feeling a little bit different on the day on and then the next day, still having that neuroplasticity moving through the brain, and we have a metaphor for that, and feeling a little bit better because of the anti-inflammation, as you kind of go through it regularly, because it's such a small dose, you have time to see it and experience it and integrate it and make better use of it. And as opposed to, you know, when you take a large dose, often it's the large doses that people have always taken are a kind of overdose compared to the widely beneficial effects of microdosing at this much lower dose. And you have time to really, you know, benefit from it.
Let's talk about a lot of people will look to microdose for enhanced performance. So what do you know about the benefit of microdosing for that result?
Well, many years ago, I was talking about microdosing with a group, and a young man stood up and said, I only microdose when I have a coding problem. And what he was saying is he only uses it for a kind of IQ enhancement for a certain amount of time. We have other people who, we now know from Ben Greenfield, who's been interviewing ultra marathoners. Let's go to the other end of coding. Ultra marathoners, that means more than one marathon at the same time, 100-mile races. It is absolutely understood in that subculture that microdosing benefits long-distance endurance running. So we have a wide range of enhancement.
Yeah, really, it goes from the artistic and creative, like writing and painting and making and playing music, to physical things like kickboxing and volleyball and the running, to all the way up to better sex. So enhanced performance seems like a kind of like a technical business or a sports thing, but it's really anything that people are interested in and like to do and like to get better at. So I'm expecting that we're going to see people in every creative and physical type of endeavor. They're going to be people at the cutting edge who are going to be looking at, does microdosing help work for this? And we may find that it does for pretty much everything. We'll see.
I'm wondering about autism, because it's kind of rampant as far as a diagnosis in this culture. And I'm thinking about children who are on the spectrum of autism. What about microdosing for minors?
generally, if you talk to your physician, the rule of thumb is don't give medications to minors that will affect consciousness, especially because their brains are still developing. The same medical community, however, says, and this is now the federal government recommendation, that you can begin treating children for ADHD at age 3. And at the moment, we said there's about 80,000 children in this 3 to 5 range that are already on medications. The medications being have a lot of names, but they're all amphetamines.
So like a generic one would be Adderall, right? Would that be one?
Yeah. Adderall is definitely one. And what we found is that...
But a three-year-old might be getting Adderall?
Yep. Not might be, is.
That feels shocking to me somehow.
Well, that's why I mentioned it. It's horrified us. And what we've said to people is you have to make your own decisions about your own children, but... And it may possibly be that microdosing for very young children might also have something to do with brain development, maybe even negatively. But it's our opinion, this is an opinion, no research, that it's safer to give a drug which seems to have almost no side effects and is not addictive than a drug which has major side effects, well understood, and is addictive. But let's look now at autism, because I gave you ADHD.
Right.
We have a case or two of younger children in the 3 to 10 age who had what we call severe childhood autism. And someone I talked to years ago, and I said, I can't recommend anything for your child. And he said, I know, but I'm a psychonaut. And he worked out a small dose of LSD for his child, somewhere in the 3 to 5 age at that point. And he wrote back and he said he's happier, he's using more words, and he is not banging his head against the floor.
Oh,
so we're talking big breakthrough at the child level. And I've kept in touch with him over the years, every year or two. And he now says that he gives his child a very small microdose once a month, which resets him emotionally, makes him happier, makes him easier to be with, makes him more curious.
His language is better.
Language skills are better.
Wow.
He's more like the kind of child that you would, you know, want him to be. So that's the kind of evidence we're looking at the moment.
That's really amazing. I'm sure that father is just ecstatic about not banging his head anymore and using language. That's just phenomenal. I'm here with Dr. James Fadiman and Jordan Gruber. They are the co-authors of Microdosing for Health, Healing, and Enhanced Performance. And if you want to know more about this work, you can go to the website microdosingbook.com, or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions. I'm here with James Fadiman and Jordan Gruber, and we're talking about microdosing psychedelics and how they enhance performance and health and healing. And we were talking about autism, which is pretty huge in this country today. You see a lot of reports from parents and others that feel that they are their children or themselves are on this spectrum of autism. Anything you want to add to that?
Yes, this is Jordan. And so in the book, we discuss child autism severe, as Jim just talked about, but we also discuss high-functioning autism or Asperger's syndrome. And for one thing, there's a fellow named Aaron Orsini who's written a book and has a terrific website and is we like to refer people to his work. But what one of the things that Jim and his colleague Sophia Korb found that for people with Asperger's, they often need a substantially higher dose for microdosing to work. And that was just one of those things that came back, you know, in the stream of reports, and they figured that out. So occasionally we'll find something like dealing with shingles, for example, when the people who are dealing with shingles, they take it more than just once a day. They've got a slightly different protocol. But it's really fun to see the information come in and to tell this to people and to let them know.
I just want to say with the book itself, the index is quite extensive, and the long list of resources that you have access is huge. So if anybody wants to just really go into a lot more detail, it's all right there for your own personal research. I just want to mention that because it is really quite an extensive book and writing about all of this that we really need right now, because there's no one place where we kind of go for finding out more. And this is a great jumping off place to do your own research. And one of the things I wanted to ask you about also, which I think is really important these days for those of us who are getting long in the tooth, we worry about dementia. And a lot of us, even who are not in our 40s or our 30s, we're all worried about dementia. Is that going to take us over? So what do you have to say about microdosing and dementia?
We say that it's one of the areas where we suspect there's going to be major breakthroughs. We have enough cases, individual cases, where people with serious dementia microdose and come out of that phase, that place, able for the first time many in months to speak, to communicate, to appreciate, to laugh, to tell stories during perhaps the time when the microdose is most effective. We don't have long-term studies. We do have studies in palliative care, which is the far end of dementia, and we're seeing, again, people better able to communicate in the last few days of life. And we're beginning now to get some Alzheimer's reports as well. But at this point, it seems to make sense, particularly when you see people come out of what seems to be non-communicative stupor and speak normally and have memories and so forth. Clearly, we're going in the right direction. So that's more of a one of the futures that we see microdosing most likely to make major breakthroughs.
Do you feel, or the reports that you get about the cumulative effect of microdosing, like over a long period of time, even if we're doing the protocols and going off for a couple of weeks? But let's say we've been doing it for years. What are you discovering about the cumulative effects of microdosing?
Hard to get those, particularly in the last couple of years when it's been an explosion. But I'm thinking of a couple of people that I know for 8 or 10 years of microdosing, again, on and off, and they just find that it's an advantage to have in their lives. It's kind of it's not in the medical cabinet, but it's nearby. It's in the supportive cabinet, and it's useful for individual moments or times. Certainly, if one is writing a book, for example, it may be very useful for first drafts. We have that from a lot of journalists. But the overall feeling of it being integrated into the health system, not into the medical system, but into the health system, which is much larger, looks like the direction it's going. And it's now become also more available socially. People are using it at social events instead of alcohol. Particularly delighted to see it being used at weddings. You go to the wedding and there's a chocolate with microdose in it and no alcohol. And we've all been to weddings where somebody had too much alcohol and everyone regrets it.
Exactly. Exactly.
But so social microdosing is a whole nother world that is opening up very quickly.
The other thing that's very exciting is we're starting to see government-sponsored studies, one in Canada with LSD for an at-home study for depression, microdosing LSD, one in New Zealand for PMDD, post-menstrual dysphoric disorder, where people are going to be doing this at home, following instructions and seeing if it works. So once again, when you think about how much safer it is than both pharmaceuticals and large doses, and how much less expensive it's going to be, we're thinking that this could spread throughout the world in many countries for many different types of problems.
Well, this brings up another subject because, like, pharmaceuticals really depend on our addiction to daily medications or whatever prescriptions. So this is a much cheaper way to go, and it's going to be, I have the question, can it be taken over by pharmaceuticals in some way? Is that some prediction?
Never underestimate the possibility of pharmaceuticals harming a good, healthy system. Ketamine costs, according to the people I know, a couple of dollars a dose physically to buy the ketamine. There is an alternative that's been approved by the U.S. government, made by Johnson & Johnson, that costs a couple of $100 a dose. In the last several years, in fact, last year, Johnson & Johnson made, not profit, but made just income of $1 billion a year on the less effective, far more expensive version of ketamine. So I never underestimate pharmaceutical companies' capacity. And they're all now busily trying to find high-dose psychedelics that have no psychological and intuitive and have no physical, so psychological effects. They're hoping to just get something where you take a high dose and you don't have depression, but you have no insights and no visions, and it'll be easier to administer. So lots of curious things will happen in the pharmaceutical industry. What I say is, fortunately, mushrooms don't know they're illegal. Psilocybin is in 200 species of mushrooms and grows on every continent but Antarctica. I think that will support microdosing throughout whatever the pharmaceutical companies come up with.
And also what we found is that natural psilocybin-containing mushrooms, an extract of those, is more effective than laboratory-synthesized psilocybin. So we have that in our favor. It's not that you're going to grow more effective psilocybin in a lab. It doesn't work that way because it doesn't have all of the other entourage chemicals that come with the substance.
There are also like kits that you can buy that are getting relatively inexpensive to grow your own mushrooms and how to fix them. And is that right?
Yeah, they're called grow kits. And literally, they can sit on the kitchen counter. You can put them in a drawer. It's gotten so it's hard not to be able to grow mushrooms. A shift in people kind of taking responsibility not only for their own health and healing, but for their own kind of not medications, but their own supplements that benefit them.
So, in doing that, what are any predictions that you can make? And it's hard to predict anything, but just through your research, how do you see the future of all of this?
I don't think you can prevent people from becoming healthy much longer.
I'm laughing. I'm just smiling really big by that comment. Yes.
Michael Pollan wrote a book about psychedelics, and the culture shifted to say, well, gee, they certainly sound like they have some very interesting properties. What we're finding, to our delight, of course, is our book's been out a couple of days. It's selling far better than we imagined. And we think we're meeting a need of people to take more and better control of their lives. And here is just one more way.
Yeah, it's actually kind of a beacon of hope in a certain way. Here are these plant-based medicines and their analogs, and they don't cause these terrible side effects, and they're not super expensive, and they work on a whole lot of things, and we're not just making it up. And maybe this is the moment that we really do take our health back into our own hands. And Jim also has an analogy that in some ways microdosing is like a hobbit. It's like Frodo. It's small. It gets in and out of places without people taking a lot of notice. There's not a lot of good opportunities for the pharmaceutical companies yet to screw it up. So maybe this will just come to fruition.
May it be so. I want to thank you both for being on today. I've been speaking with James Fadiman and also Jordan Gruber, and they are the co-authors. Actually, you've co-authored two books together. Your first book was Your Symphony of Selves, Discover and Understand More of Who We Are. And now, Microdosing for Health, Healing, and Enhanced Performance. And to know more about this work, go to the website microdosingbook.com, or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You've been listening to New Dimensions. This is program number 3837.
New Dimensions Radio has been making a difference on our planet since 1973, thanks to the generosity of our listeners. You too can help make a difference with a tax-deductible donation or membership. Please visit our website, newdimensions.org, and just click the donate button. You can also subscribe to our free weekly podcasts and find over 1,000 hours of audio dialogues in our searchable archive. New Dimensions is produced by New Dimensions Radio in Santa Rosa, California, USA. Our executive producer is Justine Willis-Toms. Our post-production editor is Lou Judson. For over four decades, New Dimensions has been producing weekly conversations at the leading edge. We sincerely thank all of you who have supported us by being members of Friends of New Dimensions, as well as members of our affiliate stations. My name is Dan Drayson. On behalf of everyone at New Dimensions, whose endeavors make this program possible, I'm wishing you well. New Dimensions Radio is an independent producer supported by listener contributions. To find out more about the program you've just heard, to subscribe to our free weekly newsletter and our New Dimensions and New Dimensions Cafe podcasts, and to access thousands of other programs in the New Dimensions archive, please visit our website, newdimensions.org. That's newdimensions.org, or call us at 707-468-5215. That's 707-468-5215. Please join us next time as we explore New Dimensions. New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support, and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in Conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org. Each week, New Dimensions explores the social, political, scientific, environmental, and spiritual frontiers with some of today's foremost social innovators, thinkers, scientists, and creative artists.
I'm Edwin Rutsch, founding director of the Center for Building a Culture of Empathy, and next time on New Dimensions, I'll be talking about how might we bridge our political divides with empathy.
Hi, my name is Lowell, and you're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, Simon Fraser Campus Radio.
Would you give me a beat?
CJSF 90.1 FM is the campus radio station for Simon Fraser University, located on Burnaby Mountain in BC, Canada. CJSF 90.1 FM, diverse, independent, yours. Check us out on SoundCloud or at cjsf.ca.